I'm still trying to understand holons, that is, anything that is a whole and also part of a larger whole, and the difference especially between social holons and individual holons, and how to intelligently use the four-quadrant model in this discussion. Can you help me, Ken?
Remember that one of the, I think, really very novel aspects of the integral approach, the Aqual integral approach, is that although for convenience sake we say, oh, this exists in the upper right quadrant or this exists in the lower left quadrant or so on, the quadrants aren't four different locations. There's only one occasion arising, any occasion that's arising moment to moment, and my claim is that that occasion itself has, if it's an individual holon now, we'll stick to that for the moment, it's a sentient being, and that sentient being can be a worm or a deer or an atom or a molecule or a cell or a human being, that it has at least three different perspectives or types of prehension or touch or awareness or sensations available to it. And it has its own interior prehension, but it also has a prehension of some objective exterior world, not necessarily self-reflexively, but it can recognize objects. If you take a pin and poke it in a cell wall, the cell will react. It has some recognition or cognition or awareness of an object. And then for the moment, we'll call it the sociocultural aspect, the lower quadrants, and I'll differentiate them in a moment. The thesis is that there's no inside without outside. It makes no sense at all. And nor is there singular without plural. It makes no sense at all. So my claim is that, for example, if a cell has prehension or a little bit of awareness, like most sophisticated philosophers maintain, that some form of awareness goes pretty much all the way down from, you know, Alfred North Whitehead to Plato to David Chalmers, then my claim is that it's going to have not only a subjective kind of sensation, but that it would have a resonance or a recognition of other subjective awarenesses that were similar to its own. So a cell, for example, or a deer or a worm, when a deer runs into an object that is another deer, it's going to know the difference between a deer and a rock. So it has an inner subjective resonance that it can spot similar subjective, it can feel similar subjectivities. So the question that we for convenience sake, we say, okay, every sentient being has, if it could talk and verbalize it, it would have an I, a we, and an it. Obviously, many sentient beings don't have that capacity, but they still have that awareness. We can still see it, we can feel it, or we can certainly deduce it. But we also claim that any entity can be looked at from those perspectives. So I can take a tin can or a chair or a Pepsi bottle that itself is not an individual holon, although it's composed of holons, but it itself, a chair, is an artifact. It doesn't have a chair awareness. But I can look at the chair from those three perspectives myself. I can give you an I opinion about that chair. You and I can discuss that chair and have our understanding about that chair, and we are talking about it, that chair over there. So the claim is that any individual occasion has these dimensions and can be looked at from them. But only a sentient being can do the looking. The chair can't look at you from its I, we, and it, because it doesn't have an I, we, or it. Although the cell has perhaps molecules in it, and those are individual holons, and those molecules are resonating with your molecules. They're both being affected by gravity and by forces that play at that level of complexity. So the chair's molecules and my molecules are communicating, if no other way than through gravity or strong, weak nuclear or electromagnetic and so on. So when we talk about social holon, social technically now has at least two meanings. And again, unfortunately, when you're pioneering a new field, you know, there's only so many words to go around, and it's always a problem, and editors won't let you make up 42 new words for every essay you submit. So in SES in particular, I talked about individual and social. And I tend to talk more now about individual and collective. And we use social as a term to mean the lower right quadrant mostly. And we use cultural as a term to mean the lower left. And we'll talk about them. If I ever talk about individual and holons and social holons, what we're talking about is individual and collective. And then every collective holon has an exterior and an interior. It can be looked at from the outside. It can be looked at from the inside. And so I'll give a couple examples, and you can see what we're talking about. We can start with something simple like a flock of geese, let's say. We could go down and do a crystal lattice. We could do any collective holon. But it is a flock of geese is one of the reasons that we consider collective holons to be holons is that they share a lot of things in common with individual holons. So much so, as you know, that many people think that social holons, collective holons, are individual organisms and can be treated as such. And I tried to give a strong argument on why we can't do that, that individual and social or sociocultural are two different things, but they share a lot of things in common. They are structured wholes. They do have communication between their parts. They do have a type of agency. We call it nexus agency, and I'll get to that in a moment. And they're not a heap, and they're not an artifact. So for that reason, we tend to talk about individual holons, social holons, and social here means lower left and lower right. Heaps and artifacts. Those are four of the most common kinds of things you find lying around out there. They don't exhaust it, but those are the ones you mostly run into. The four quadrants apply to an individual holon, and we talked about why that's so, because only an individual holon has an eye, an upper left. A social holon does not have an eye. It has an its or a we or some form of nexus agency, but it doesn't have an eye. And you can see this in a flock of geese. The geese are flying in a V formation. So that V formation itself is the lower right. That's the actual social structure. You can see it. It's an exterior thing. You can look up in the sky and go, oh, look at that V-shaped flock of geese. And sure enough, there it is. You can see it. And then in the upper right is an individual geese. And again, when I say upper right, it does, they're not actually something located there. It's that we can take an individual geese and look at it from an I, we, it, and its perspective, and we'll see these four different things if we do that. But I talk colloquially or loosely as if they're located in the four quadrants, and we can again come back to talking about that a little bit later. So the correctly the way to say it is that at this particular point, any individual geese has a exterior social component that is, in this case, composed of four or five other geese flying in a V formation. And the upper right, or the exterior individual component, is an individual geese, the organism. You can look at it. It has wings and feet, web feet, and a liver, and sometimes that liver ends up on a restaurant table, but that's another ugly story. So in the upper left quadrant, there's what an individual geese is feeling. Now, in the upper right quadrant, if you listen to neo-Darwinian biology and you say, why do geese fly in a V formation? They fly in a V formation on the right hand for the same reason that Allied bombers flew in a V formation when they bombed Germany. It's the safest way to fly airplanes against attack from other airplanes. And so that's your survivalist, exterior, materialist kind of explanation. In the left-hand quadrants, geese fly in formation because it's fun. It's just the joy of living. It's a gas to fly together. They have an interior feeling. They have apprehension. They have some degree of sensation or awareness. And that's the upper left. So any individual geese has this interior sensation. And the lower left is what kind of shared feelings or shared orientations do the geese have? And again, if they have an interior feeling, then they're aware of other interiors. And they actually will exchange. They will communicate. And so we can again look at the lower left and the lower right quadrant in order to do that. And this is where we use integral semiotics. And we use the four quadrants, remember, can be used. Primarily, they're used to indicate four dimensions or perspectives that all sentient individual holons have. But you can also look at something from these four quadrants. And so you can use